A busy Friday morning rolls on. Big Show Friday, hour number two, and we check in New York City with our good friend and beat writer for the Indiana Hoosiers at the Indianapolis Star. You can find him on Twitter at Zach Osterman. Zach, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
I am better. I know you just heard that forecast and are jealous and probably want to be back here. Do you want to give the folks the forecast for New York City today?
Well, I actually haven't checked it yet, but they are expecting a nor'easter to hit. Well, I think it had already hit by the time we left Madison Square Garden last night. I think it's in the 30s out right now. It's been raining pretty much nonstop, and I think it's only supposed to get worse from here.
So hunker down and be safe. Take your time getting back. We'll save the sunshine for you on the weekend. Sadly, there was no sunshine at the Madison Square Garden last night. It's the world's most famous arena, the mecca of basketball on the East Coast. And Indiana men's basketball season came to an end last night. The angle I presented earlier this morning, I wanted to share with you and see what you think. I think this team was treated, but it was never cured. Is that an accurate depiction of maybe what we saw in 31 games in the 2017-2018 season?
Yeah, that's probably fair, if you want to get metaphorical about it. I mean, I think this was just a I think it was a flawed team. I don't think that would, you know, that's hardly a galloping shock to anybody if you say that. I think it was a team that found a way to mask a lot of its flaws at various different points. I think it's a team that got better. I don't think you can deny that, whether you talk about individuals or you talk about the collective. But I also think it's a team that, like a lot of flawed teams, eventually just couldn't outrun those flaws. And, you know, I know that fans are going to be disappointed in the manner of defeat last night, and I'm not saying it was only a matter of time, because I would have picked Indiana to beat Rutgers as well. But I also think that at a certain point, every team reaches kind of the end of its rope, and I think this one pretty much had.
And with five seniors on the team as well, there's always that glow around having experience and that being a good thing. And I think all the kids played hard in that. But that just simply doesn't cure all of your ills in college basketball today. The other issue that we saw last night on display, talking about being a flawed team, this team just didn't shoot the basketball very well, very consistently. Is that an accurate depiction?
Yeah, I mean, statistically speaking, you know, this is one of the poorest three-point shooting teams. I'd have to go back and look at where the final numbers fell out, but this is one of the poorest three-point shooting teams in Indiana in basketball history. And, you know, I think there were a lot of people that saw three-point shooting, for example, as sort of a Band-Aid over other problems during Tom Crean's tenure. I never quite thought that was fair. I think that people have to remember how big a part of modern basketball the three-point shot has become, how important the court spacing it gives you has become, how much else it opens up offensively, whether in transition or in the half court. And this team could just never find its range from behind the arc. And even sometimes when it did, I mean, you think about like Ohio State, for example, I think they may have hit 11 of 20 in that game, something like that, and they still lost. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I think you also saw last night the fact that it wasn't just that the team collectively did not shoot well, it was that there was never really anybody on the team, absent a couple of stretches from Robert Johnson and Devontae Green, that could consistently just kind of find ways to hit the big shots and to start runs or stop runs. So it was both kind of, the statistical average, if you want to say, you know, this team struggled with. And then also, I think that this team lacked maybe having those one or two players that were consistently able to find a big shot when it needed it most, like last night.
And part of that was mentioned in Archie Miller's post-game comments. He said Indiana really struggled to get the ball to Juwan Morgan. They did a nice job of collapsing on him. Well, when you don't knock down shots, you don't create any movement, and that helps defenses defend. I think Morgan was the biggest revelation of the season. He had 15 points last night and 9 rebounds. When we start saying, oh, geez, he just had 15 and 9 last night, isn't that the true indication of how great a season he had when we're just poo-pooing a game like that?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Archie Miller even said after the game, and I thought this watching the game that he had 15-9. He felt like he didn't have as much of an impact on the game as he could have had. I think Archie himself basically took responsibility for that, that he didn't do enough to maybe free Morgan up, try and get Morgan more post touches, try and get Morgan more involved. I think he only took 9 shots. I'd also say, and this is very subjective, but, you know, having watched this team up close all season, it's felt in the last couple of weeks like Juwan Morgan has had a lot of games like that, where, you know, he finishes with 13-10, or, you know, even the Ohio State game when he had 18-9, he scored 9 of his 18 points in the 2 overtimes, which was really good if you think about what Indiana needed in those overtimes. But then you also think that's only 9 points in you know, 40 minutes of regulation basketball. And I think the big thing for Morgan, it felt like he started to wear down, which probably shouldn't be a surprise. He never had a role this big in college. He'd never been, you know, this much the center of attention. Over time, that wears you out. If you can't shoot the 3, it wears you out even more, because there was no way for Indiana to consistently sort of free Morgan up inside or take some of the double teams and some of the sort of collapsing defenses away around him. And I think that probably got to him as the season went on. I don't think he was playing hurt or anything like that. And listening to him last night, he was already kind of thinking about next season in terms of, you know, talking about what needed to happen this offseason and how he think this team needed to improve. But I think there was also, again, in particular because Indiana could not shoot the 3 and therefore space the 4 well enough to help him the ways that a big man needs to be helped in modern college basketball. I think even Juwan Morgan might have started to feel the grind of this season, honestly.
Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. He checks in from the Indianapolis Star in New York City covering the Hoosiers. Was this your last game of the season, Archie Miller? I know you asked him specifically afterwards if the NIT did not develop. The answer simply was no on anything else. What was his reaction when you asked about NIT?
Yeah, I mean, he made it pretty clear Indiana would participate in the NIT if invited. I don't think they expect to be invited. You know, I mean, his direct quote, I don't have the sheet in front of me, but I think it was, I don't think the postseason is on the horizon for us or something like that. On the horizon for us is what he used, the specific term he used. So at this point, at 16-15, with some of the losses they've had, you know, NIT bracketology is not quite as deeply explored of a science as NCAA bracketology, but it still looks unlikely that Indiana, highly unlikely, I would say, that Indiana is going to wind up in a position to get an NIT invitation. If they did get one, they would gladly take it. They would participate. But yeah, there's no interest in anything, I guess you'd say, beneath the NIT, the CIT, the CBI. If there is no NIT for this team, and I think it's, again, highly, highly unlikely that there is, then the season's over.
We'll wait till next Sunday to figure out that officially, correct? There will be no, unless Indiana comes out and says, hey, look, they're not going to come out and say we're not going to play in the NIT, correct, since that's part of it. So we have to wait till the NIT selection show. Isn't that like at 10:30 after the NCAA tournament show next Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it happens pretty quickly after Selection Sunday is over. Obviously, that's sort of the unintended consequence of the move in the tournament up a week, is that now all these bubble teams like your Penn State and your Nebraska, if they can't, you know, secure the automatic bid or a couple of big wins here, they're going to be sitting on their thumbs for, you know, a week plus waiting for news, whether it's good or bad. And Indiana's in a similar boat again. I would be really, really surprised if we saw Indiana in the NIT at this point. I think Indiana would be surprised. But, you know, I suppose stranger things have happened.
Taking a look back at this season, it opened with a thud at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. Was it Fort Wayne opening night? Was it Indiana State? I can't even remember now.
Indiana State.
Feels like a generation ago. And then you close the year losing to Rutgers on a neutral court. Will that be the focus, or will the focus be what the advancement was in the program? Maybe not this morning, but if you take a day to digest this, Archie Miller knows what he's doing. There was significant and tangible progress made, but it's not anywhere near the finished product, and I don't think anybody's suggesting it is.
No, I mean, my impression right now, anyway, is that this season will broadly be remembered more for improvement than for frustration. You know, I think in some respects that'll be determined by what happens next. You know, everything always requires context, and this season doesn't have any of it, or at least a lot of it yet. I shouldn't say any of it, but certainly doesn't have much of it. You know, if next season Indiana goes from 16 wins to 22 wins and goes to the NCAA tournament, and in 4 years, you know, Indiana's competing for a Big Ten title at the top end of the conference again, then I think a lot of people probably look back on this season and say that was, you know, a season of necessary growing pains and transition from kind of one philosophy and way of doing things to another one. But I think that we do need that context, you know, and obviously, look, if Romeo Langford commits to Indiana in the next couple months and all of a sudden it's Romeo Langford and Juwan Morgan coming back next season, well, then I think nobody's worried too much about the pitfalls or the valleys in this season. But right now, I'd say most IU fans, the average IU fan that I interact with, sees this season, will remember this season as sort of necessary, as one of growing pains, but important growing pains, and one would probably say, again, I think the word is necessary growing pains to set up for something else long term.
And Archie Miller, throughout the year, I think we learned some things about him as well. There is a system there. He referred to it, I believe, in his opening remarks when he was hired about the blueprint. You can tell there is a systemic approach to how he wants to play, how he wants his team, and how he expects his team to play. He didn't really deviate from the plan moving forward. Is that something IU fans should be encouraged about?
Well, what's interesting is it was talking to people who were around him at Dayton. It was very similar to the way he operated at Dayton. And basically, his philosophies were things that he clung tightly to. You know, essentially his attitude was, if it's not working, it's not because it's wrong, and it's not because the players can't do it. It's because we're not teaching it well enough or executing it or implementing it well enough. And he stuck to everything, you know, his preferred defensive style, his preferred offensive style, just kind of his overall approach and ethos in the game. And I think his attitude was, let's take some lumps early to sort of establish this foundation. And then when we've got that foundation, we can really start to build on what we want to do. And if we haven't compromised on anything that we weren't, you know, prepared to at the beginning, then we will have exactly what we're looking for once we get, you know, a little bit deeper into the project. And if you look at, you know, it's his season at Dayton. He wins 20 games his first year, goes to the NIT, loses the first game to Iowa. His second season, they only win 17 games, I believe, finish 7-9 in conference, don't play in the postseason, be on the Atlantic 10 tournament. And then from there, is the next season is the Elite Eight run, the beginning of those 4 years where, you know, they went to the NCAA tournament every year, which was the Dayton record. They won two conference titles. They won, I think, five or six NCAA tournament games. And so, and a lot of people at Dayton credited that four-year stretch, which is basically as successful as any four-year stretch in Dayton basketball history, credited that to Miller's persistence and his ability to really stay, kind of stand the course, even when things got rough during those first couple of years, you know, 2.5 years, however you want to say. Obviously, history won't exactly repeat itself in Indiana, but I think you certainly see him doing some of the same things in terms of just saying, we're not going to compromise, we're not going to run a zone, we're not going to, you know, scrap our offense for something more simplistic. We're going to keep doing what I know works, what I believe confidently works, and long-term, the guys will learn how to do it in a way that wins us games.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing a minute of any kind of zone defense for any stretch for anything this year. It's man-to-man, it's packed line, that's how it's going to be. And everybody needs to learn up on that. Briefly, before we let you go, everybody always has one eye to the future. You've already mentioned one of the players that could come in here and make an impact immediately. But there is a class of, I believe, four signed up and ready to go already. What is the outlook of this class if the class ended today and that was it moving forward? Do Hoosier fans have something to be excited about?
Yeah, well, it's a top 20 class right now. Jerome Hunter, Rob Fennessy, Demazie Anderson, Jake Forrester. Four guys who are probably all at different points in their development. You know, if with or without Romeo Langford, I think you see a couple of them early next year. Robert Finney is one. Jerome Hunter is another. Demezi Anderson is a really high-volume scorer. If he can translate his offense quickly, particularly his ability to shoot the ball from behind the three-point line, then I think he can see the floor quickly, although I think even by his own admission, he needs to improve defensively. Forrester is more of a developmental guy. Athleticism and tools, 6'8", 6'9". You know, I think the big question about him positionally is whether or not he'll ever be able to consistently shoot the three. If he can, then maybe he becomes one of those kind of 3-and-D forwards. If he can't, then you're probably talking about a guy who operates more inside and is meant to really clean up the glass. I think you'd also probably throw Race Thompson in there. Technically, Thompson is part of the 2017 class, but I think people have kind of forgotten that Indiana's got a top 100 forward sitting on its bench that hasn't played a minute of basketball season by design. So, you know, you're going to get something, you know, a freshman plus kind of season potentially from him next year as a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, he had prep school in Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what he did. And there was never any thought given to playing him. And my understanding was essentially that Indiana sort of promised him he would get that year where he didn't have to worry about playing, where all he had to worry about was getting better behind the scenes. Now he's obviously had that. So it's a strong first class. I don't think there's any question about that. It would be obviously a lot stronger if they got Romeo Langford. But I think you're looking at a class that's going to have a lot of guys that are probably 3 or 4 year players. I don't know that there's any 1 or 2 and done types in this class, at least not as we know them right now. It's certainly a class that brings in that point guard Indiana needs and Robert Finney. He's had a great year at Lafayette McCutchen. It also brings in one of the things I talk about a lot when people ask is there's 3 guys in that class listed as forwards, Jake Forrester, Forrester, Anderson, and Hunter, and yet they're all different kinds of players. So you could reasonably feel the lineup that had all 3 of them on the floor, and none of them would really be getting in the way of the others, at least as we talk about their skill sets in their games right now. So I think you're going to see immediate impact. I think there's probably at least 1 or 2 guys in that class that might take a couple of years to really develop. But I think you'll certainly see, my guess is at least Finney and Hunter pretty quickly.
And speaking of next year and everything else that goes along with that, do you think, and I keep asking you one more question, do you think you need the 4-year, 3-year guys to set the foundation, and then do you try to cherry pick the one? How does that one and done deal even work? There's no guarantee to get any of them, so you just hope to get in the fight for that. Help us out there.
Well, what do you mean in terms of recruiting?
Yeah, 3 years. You talk about having 3 and 4 year players. Nobody's leaving early. Are there guys down the list that Indiana's looking at that could fall into that one and done category that could sprinkle in with them?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, Langford is sort of 1A, 1B, and 1C at this point. I can't imagine many people would expect him to last more than a season in college, wherever he goes. You know, Indiana is heavily recruiting Keon Brooks out of Fort Wayne. I don't know if he's quite a one-and-done level talent. They certainly got the national ranking to do it. And I think that, that's maybe one of the questions that you probably ask about Archie Miller's recruiting philosophy at Indiana. Obviously, he was never really dealing with one-and-done level talent to date, and it was always more, either transfers or, guys who were, more projectable, who could maybe do 1 or 2 things really well, but had to really develop all the other parts of their game. I think if you're Archie Miller at Indiana, what you probably want to mix in is basically a number of the guys that we've talked about, maybe 3 4-year players who can really kind of be, bedrock players that come in and stay for a while and help sort of maintain your culture. And then mix that in with having those elite one and done level talents that will give you just kind of that immediate impact as freshmen. For example, if Romeo Langford comes to Indiana, it's not hard to imagine him averaging 16, 17, 18 points a game next season with all the opportunities he would potentially have in the offense. So, I don't know that Indiana is ever really going to become one of these schools that just brings in waves and waves of, 1-year college players. If for no reason other than because there aren't a lot of those guys around. It's not like there are just 5 or 6 of those players every year that can't find a home. what I think is probably likely for Indiana is to try and get one of those players most years and sort of have those players accentuate classes that bring in guys who will be around for three, if not four seasons in Bloomington, and really kind of, you know, keep the program humming.
All right. Juwan Morgan staying or going?
He said he hadn't talked about it really at all. You know, obviously, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he declared, just to declare, just to have the opportunity and get some workouts and things. I would be, you know, based on everything I've heard kind of out of the NBA side, I would be surprised if he had a ton of professional sort of potential right now. I think he would probably fit the mold of that kind of player that it makes sense to declare, go out, you know, hear what the NBA has to say, and then take that back into preparation for your senior season. I will also say he was talking pretty unreservedly last night about his senior season, and you don't want to, you know, put words in anybody's mouth or anything like that. But I mean, it was a lot of, there wasn't a lot of if, there was a lot of when last night in terms of talking about what needs to happen and getting better in the off season and how guys need to step up and what he needs to do and all that sort of thing. So his mind last night was clearly set, already sort of setting itself toward his senior season. I wouldn't be surprised if he declared. I also wouldn't be surprised if that is just kind of one of those declare, go get some NBA feedback, hear from the pro guys, and then bring that back into your preparation for your last year of college.
And for the rabid fan base, the gentleman from Southern Indiana will make his decision on his future when?
Well, that is still kind of a moving target. The McDonald's All-American game is March 28th. There's been some suggestion from him and his dad that he could commit then, or at least have a decision made around then. There's also there's an apparent desire to visit Indiana one more time, which is I would say good news for Indiana most likely. The problem with that is I think that the the IAAA tournaments would run right up against the McDonald's All-American game. So if he did want to get that Indiana visit in, it's possible that they'd have to wait until after the McDonald's All-American game, at which point he would probably just commit sometime around the opening of the April signing window. And you caught me flat-footed in terms of knowing exactly when that is. But the plan was always from the beginning for him to decide in April when he could sign. So if he doesn't decide at the McDonald's All-American game and he does wait and decide in April, then I think that's just sort of that's essentially the timeline that was laid out.
And the part of it is there is no requirement for any of this and at what day it needs to be on. There's not some kind of magic numbered day. It's not like election day where you have to go out and vote, so to speak. This could be, it's fluid because it's allowed to be fluid, and who knows what kind of production, if any, it will take on. It's just Indiana fans are itching. They're itching to get back to levels that haven't seen in a while. And we'll see if that happens. Please be safe in the cyclone bomb zone or whatever they're calling this thing. And please travel safely home. And congratulations to you and your wife. We know you've got a big April decision day coming up as well, being new parents for the first time. So congratulations on that. We'll talk soon, my friend.
Sounds good, sir. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being on.